Welcome to the Creative Gap Podcast. Glad to have you here. And today we have another great episode. Let's welcome to the show cinematographer and producer Nicole Shapiro. Nicole Shapiro, welcome to the Creative Gap Podcast. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I'm stoked.
I think we met a couple years ago. And at this time, I think you were just producing a couple years ago. Is that right?
I actually started producing. I probably just started producing 2 years ago, but I have always been part of camera. Like, camera has been my bread and butter, and then kind of accidentally got into producing. I didn't really know what I was doing when I was doing it. And then I was like, oh, okay, this is producing. So I should start charging for that.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about your dual producing DP stuff a little bit later, but I'm just curious as to know your background a little bit. You're based in Toronto, right?
I'm based in Toronto, My background, I actually have a kinesiology degree. So I came from the world of...
Oh, nice.
Yep. So I came from the world of sport and... sport and, I guess, sport media, and I transitioned into commercial pretty much after COVID and learned a lot of, like, DSLR stuff through weddings as well. I feel like everyone gets into weddings at the beginning, so that was kind of
the... at least. Unless you get stuck in weddings. I know a few people that, like, truly love weddings, and I give it to them.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean... if it works, it works. But for me, like, as soon as COVID hit, I had one wedding that was like a COVID wedding that I captured. And I was like, I'm never doing this again, because all your guests, I mean, all your guests have masks. You can't see smiles. Like, just postpone it. Like, so I lost, I mean, as well as everyone else, we lost a lot of money if you were ever in weddings during that time. So then that was the year I pivoted away from weddings and got more into like commercial stuff and music videos. So yeah.
Very cool. Did you start, when did you start like holding a camera? When was the first time you realized that this was something that you maybe thought of as a hobby, but then you thought of it as an actual profession or the possibility of a profession?
I think the wedding stuff was like the kind of spark in my mind of, okay, I don't know if anyone else has this like list or this like note in their phone of like, if I shoot this many weddings times this amount in a summer, like this is the amount I'm going to make. And, you know, minus taxes and stuff. I remember my aunt, I shot her daughter's wedding. So my cousin, and obviously she was biased, but Aunt Arlene was like, you know, you can like make a lot of money doing this, right? And I was like, interesting. Like, I'm in my fourth year graduating from kin, and here I am thinking I'm going to be like a strength and conditioning coach and I was going to go to Ohio and do my master's. Like, I had a whole plan. And then the summer after I graduated, I actually did two internships, and that was my deciding factor. I did like a strength and conditioning internship, and then I did the like wedding videography internship. And in both scenarios, I was always thinking of the angles of like, oh, they need an ad for this, or like they should be promoting their gym this way. And I was like not even focusing on the workouts at that point. So yeah, that was kind of the deciding factor in terms of like it being a sustainable career, because there is always that starving artist mentality, but as an independent filmmaker, I just feel like there's so much opportunity. And Toronto is like such a growing city that I feel like this wave of popularity for video, I kind of like, I'm in that right now, you know, like started when video was becoming popular. And now that it is popular, I have systems in place that make it really easy for either people to find me or for, you know, just productions in general to run. So it was kind of a good time to like get into it, but
Yeah, I was going to ask if you had any interest in ever wanting to move to like a bigger city like LA or New York, or has Toronto been kind of like, have you find a lot of benefit in it being a growing city that you're kind of growing with it? Like, people have asked me why I don't live in LA, because I have the mentality of I'd rather be like a big fish in a small pond and grow that way I don't know if you have a similar mentality as well.
That's the exact same way I feel, actually. There's two ways you could do it, right? You could go to LA and actually be a starving artist and be a very, very, very small fish in a ginormous pond and miraculously meet the right people and get in that way. Or, yeah, you could be a bigger fish in a smaller pond, which is what I feel. And the pond is only getting bigger. So for me, it makes sense to stay here until I feel like, you know, I've hit my ceiling, but I don't see the ceiling anywhere close to me right now. I have so much work to do. I have so much, like, so many connections to still be made and, like, understanding of the dynamics in the city and things like that. There's a lot of production houses already. There's tons of, you know, agencies and reps that, yeah, like, I have yet to meet. So it's still super new and big for me. And yeah, until I reach a ceiling, great. But it's funny, right. I literally just had a conversation with someone, Justin Abernethy. He's a director here, and he just got his US visa. So him and I were chatting of, like, what does that look like? Do you rent a place in Toronto for way too much money and then travel, sure, to the US and spend more money there and go back and forth, you know, like, based on your opportunities? So it's like a weird, it's all, especially being Canadian, it's always a thought of, like, the US, right, has projects that have more money behind it. And that's kind of where the attraction lies, no matter where, like New York, LA, but anywhere really in the States has, yeah, usually more money behind production, which is why it's enticing for us. But
do you have any people, like, within the Toronto area, or, you know, I don't really know the areas of Canada too well, but that you kind of look up to as in terms of, like, inspiration, like, oh, there's still, like, this person is at this level doing such great work in Toronto or in Canada, there's no reason for me to, like, move? Are there people like that you gain inspiration from?
There's a mix. Like, right now I'm in this weird, interesting phase where I have these, like, multiple buckets where I'm kind of dipping my feet in, like, I don't want to say the influencer world, but it's kind of like,
yeah,
the online educators,
yeah,
you know, of filmmaking. That's what I like to call it more so.
Right.
But
influencer,
yeah, there's, like,
a weird word.
Yeah. I just want to educate and, like, you know, be the face of it. But yeah, I think that world, obviously, I look up to Lizzie a ton. I met Lizzie, mm-hmm, like 2 years ago, and just from hanging out with her and stuff, we actually met through TikTok, which is insane. Like, that's another avenue of, you know, just crazy meeting people. She travels all over the place, so she's not exactly like a, you know, work in Toronto only kind of girl, but Toronto's her home base. So that was like a huge source of inspiration of, like, that Toronto can still be your home base and you can travel and do things in different spots to, you know, just make a name for yourself. You don't have to fully, like, pick up and move your whole world somewhere else. Right. But yeah, she's been a huge source of inspiration. And it's funny because from her side of things, this is maybe like a little tangent, but, like, because she lives more in the influencer space and I live more in the filmmaking world, she then also takes inspiration from me because she's like, I just want to be on set more. So, like, right, let's do stuff together. And I'm like, well, okay, I want to be more in the YouTube world, or at least just see, like, what that is. So we kind of work really well together in that sense of, like, let's go on set and I'll bring you on to, like, direct or produce or something, and I can shoot it and you can bring on Justin, like, her videographer, and do your behind the scenes explainer of, like, what we're doing today and things like that. And vice versa,
awesome,
where I get to see, you know, what those brands want and what that looks like on her end. So yeah, that's been, like, a big inspiration for me, because especially in those slow months with film, as you know, like, for this year, my slow month was, no, it started November. I was like, whoa, right, this is coming early. So it's the December, January, February kind of slow ebb and flow, right, month that we all go through. But with you know, YouTube and the influencing stuff, it doesn't really stop. So yeah. It's like, it's very good
to diversify. It seems like you're trying to diversify your world a little bit more.
Yep, 100%. I think the diversification started there. I mean, it just happened yesterday when Instagram went down, but there was like a really big Instagram outage. I don't know if it happened in the States, but it happened in
I didn't even realize.
I guess Toronto. Oh yeah. It was maybe 6 hours like yesterday. Maybe
that's
it was
a
less.
Pretty substantial amount of time.
Yeah. So that happened like years ago. I remember there was like a bigger outage and I thought to myself, okay, I need to start not just having Instagram as the place where people come and find me and hire me and stuff. I need to diversify. So that's when I was doing the TikTok thing. And then this year it's like both the TikTok and the YouTube thing. So I'm trying to just get in all the pockets so that I can, you know, not be reliant on like one single platform. Cause that can get really scary. Like if Instagram just decides to evaporate one day, there goes a lot of my work. So
I don't want that
to be a downfall. So yeah.
I always wonder that cause Instagram, I use it as kind of just like my portfolio. I don't post any personal things at all. It's like my business page. That's what you look at for my work. And then I don't do a TikTok, but I do YouTube. But I always wonder like how much YouTube actually influences people to hire me as a DP. And I've seen over the past year or so, the behind the scenes stuff that I've done has been really beneficial for people to see how I work as a DP on set. Like having a microphone, you get to hear how you communicate with people. Cause you know, a lot of people can make a good looking image. I don't want to say it's not hard, but it's easier to do that than to actually be a good DP in terms of communication, leadership, all those different attributes. So I have definitely seen a benefit. I was telling you earlier, the film I'm doing next month, the person found me through the podcast, actually. But that was just another way of someone hiring me because she liked the way that I communicated things and the way I spoke. So I think it's really great what you're doing and diversifying. And I'm curious as to like how you find the balance between the two. Because for me, it's difficult. And it takes a lot of like mental energy to DP something while also focusing on behind the scenes and then editing that. And it could be a lot sometimes.
Yeah. I haven't done it for that long. So I'm not really.
I'm curious, just like the beginning stages, like how are you feeling so far about it?
So far it's been okay. But like I definitely can see it being like a ton of work. So the recent spec we just did with Bumble, that was so much fun, by the way. But when we didn't really plan on doing like three behind the scene parts to it, we took tons of inspiration from you actually on your behind the scenes. It's like less edited, and I'm like, oh, that's great, because in my mind I'm like, I have less editing.
Raw yeah, behind it's the more scenes. That's raw, kind of the way like, I think of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like fly on the wall, like what's happening, take the time to actually absorb it. Like I really love that style. And I mean, it's also great because there's less cutting to do. So it's like a win-win. That behind the scenes, we took inspiration from that of like doing a little bit of like, you know, less cuts. And then the lighting breakdown, like Wandering DP does like a phenomenal job of that.
Phenomenal.
So I'm just like, that's where that inspiration came from. And then the overall production breakdown. So there were three parts to that. So Sydney, the director, she actually edited the behind the scenes one and just chopped up like all the B-roll and all the A-roll and tried to, you know, piece together kind of a story with it. So that was super helpful. I just went in and like added text and added like an intro and things like that. So that was like super helpful. But the other two I edited, and it's kind of fun, but I feel like
I watched it this morning. It's great. I think you're doing a great job. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I say that it's fun now, but I know that it's a grind, like it's a marathon. So I have to just, you know, be conscious of the, I guess, amount of effort I'm expending, you know, with it to just pace myself. Cause I know I can be like, yeah, this one spec, let's do three videos. And then the next one I'm like, oh damn, this is a lot. So
yeah, I think I remember I did a commercial or three commercials in a row and all of them had behind the scenes. And then by the end of it, I had three behind the scenes that I had to edit. And I just, I think I crashed. I couldn't do it. It was too much. It took me like 3 months to actually get around to one of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, it could be overwhelming at a time. But that Bumble project, I was something I wanted to talk about, I think was really well done. And I'm curious because for something that I did, I think similarly to you is I don't think I labeled myself as a producer, but in the beginning, before I was getting like, you know, bigger DP work for a lot of the spec stuff, I was creating the projects myself, producing it, but also DPing it. What does that relationship look like for you, EPing and DPing simultaneously?
It's so much work. Like, this time around, we actually did get like a production manager. So she did a lot of the like call sheets. Well, our AD did the call sheet, but there were so many parts that we could delegate. And we were like, oh, thank goodness. Like, I don't have to worry about asking the crew about dietary restrictions and food and all these like logistical things that are like, I've got one brain cell and that's dedicated to creative. Like, so I think the EP side of things, and I'll actually bring up another project that we did like a couple months back. I think it was, we shot in November and it came out around January. It was for Jia Jia Tequila. It's like half owned by, I didn't know this at the time, but it's half owned by the Chainsmokers and then half owned by Fuck Jerry, the like meme account.
Okay. Yeah. It's interesting.
So random. So anyway, we just like the bottle of it. But in that project, it was really important for me and the director. We actually co-DP'd on that. So there was like three parties involved. And EPing in that sense, especially on a spec, is truly, in at least in my perspective, it's truly about creative control. So like if you're investing financially, you have to be aware that other people are investing as well, their own money, and they have to have equal creative control. So like all of the EPs slash like co-DPs and directors should be CC'd on everything. Like we should have eyes on everything. The edit, the color, you know, like the rollout, absolutely, all of this stuff. So it was, and typically, like as a DP, if you're hired for a job, you're not concerned about any of that. Oh, we have a visitor.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
What was his name again?
Sebastian.
Sebastian.
The camera's over here.
For those that are just listening, Sebastian is a cat.
Makes a little appearance. Thank you for that.
No, that's great. I think having that balance it's definitely a challenge, but having that creative control. And for me, I found that producing is oddly satisfying. Like I really love the conception of a project and seeing it all the way through. And, you know, being a DP, you're obviously solving a ton of problems regularly, mostly on the creative side and sometimes, you know, on the logistics side. But as a producer, you're dealing with every problem that comes your way in every department, regardless. So seeing it all the way through has been like really satisfying. Are you good with numbers?
I hated math actually. In school, I was like, absolutely not. Like I had this mental block of I don't like numbers at all. But in a production, it's more about like ratios, if anything, of like what department gets this and like, you know, it's more of like a managing numbers versus like calculations and things like that. You know, Excel can do that for us. So, the number side is in terms of like, budgeting, it's definitely satisfying when you're like, you actually, you know, you meet your mark and you're like, oh, we actually did it for this amount. Like this it's very satisfying. But I think the EP side, I guess, like the fun part about it is, like you said, just seeing it through from the very beginning and like getting your team and your leads and like making sure the environment is good on set. Like I'm such a big advocate for like just good vibes.
Good like vibes.
Especially
that's
the spec. Like just just everyone is having a good time, and I don't know. Like it I think it's EPs usually, you know, on bigger sets, like sometimes they're not even on a set. So like for me to for both of us to be that, you know, higher level person that kind of conceptualized it all and to like see it happen and, you know, just have everyone be involved and excited about the project. It's like so fulfilling. So but I'm excited to not do that for, you know, all the projects. Like, do you usually hire production managers and producers that are under you?
For the ones that I produce, I'm trying to think of, so I did two, last year that I'm thinking of in particular. And one of them, I did not hire a production manager. So I dealt with all of the producing roles. It was just me. But I also brought on a director that was not a producer. So that was a weird relation. Not weird, because we work great together and we have a great relationship. So I was producer and DP, and there was a director in between those two roles. So like, that's very interesting to deal with. And then the other project, I brought on another producer, project manager, who I've worked with on a ton of commercials, and she is phenomenal and took so much weight off my chest.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yep.
But
yeah, it's in this case with the Bumble thing, Sydney is also quite good at producing. Like she produces her own stuff too.
That's great.
So I didn't have to like, you know, handhold or explain like, oh, you know, this is how we do things, or like, this is, you know, the usual flow of like, she just knew. And it's so helpful when you work with, you know, like another EP in that sense, that if, you know, the director you're working with, was he financially contributing too?
No.
Oh, okay. Mm-mm. So then, I mean, you would have more creative control if anything, but.
And I think that was the interesting part, was like, technically I have the creative control, but I brought him on for a specific reason, that I had this idea, but I'm not a director. I don't want to be a director. So I brought him on because I love his ideas and I love what he could bring to the table. So like, I almost had to like let go of the ego side of, oh, I'm the EP, I have creative control, and just be like, I brought this person on for a reason. Let me trust what he wants to do.
Sweet. Yeah. Yep. Trust is
huge. Which can be
a
hard thing to do.
That's very, very huge. Yep. Yeah, I like respect that a lot, because the moment that someone's, you know, just runs with it and they're like, no, this is my way or the highway, it's like, oh, the vibes just get killed.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
That Bumble project, I want to switch to DPing a little bit. I'm curious as to, besides EPing, just from the cinematography perspective, what challenges you faced making that project?
I remember feeling the most friction, or like the most nerves, when it came to lighting. And even though we did all the prep and everything, I was still like, there's some moments where you have the lighting plan, you do it, and you're like, no, no, there's something not right here. So I had a really good gaffer though. So I was like, I delegated that and really trusted him of like, how do we make this look like my reference images? So the one thing that really helped was on my iPad, just drawing, like, if the source is coming from here, these are where my shadows are going to be. I need it to be softer. Do we have more diffusion we can use? And just lots of all of those little questions. And the fact that the gear that we were using was Andre's, our gaffer. So and with a spec, like, you're trying to conserve as much money as possible. Sure. And so there were definitely times where I was like, oh, I wish I could have had some more lights to either light the exterior, or like had more MCs to like give more pops somewhere, you know, like just small little things. But sometimes it just comes down to budget, where you're like, oh, like, It's not gonna break the image, but it would be nice. But of course. There's always something of it would be nice to have more. But
I'm curious. Yeah. I want to dig a little deeper into like your lighting plan. So were your lighting? Did you design them maybe on like after a scout that you've done? Like what about your lighting plans did not align to it being, you know, how you envisioned in production when you were actually shooting?
The one thing that we, I guess, like, didn't use was we had the F-22, and we, okay. I basically it's have, a like, light. I love it. It's, like, so, so versatile and so light. Like, you can just throw mm-hmm. it anywhere. One of my friends, Will Banks, he says it's, like, Lil Frank's Banks? Hot sauce. Banks. So, B-I-N-K-S.
Oh, I thought you said Lil Banks, like. His name's like a rapper name, Lil Banks. Oh.
No, Will Banks.
Oh, Will Banks.
Like William,
not
Lil, yeah.
Not Lil Banks.
Lil Banks. Yeah. Imagine. Oh, you would That's never funny. Live that down on a set.
Right.
he always makes a joke about that light of calling it Frank's Red, like Frank's Red mm. hot sauce, because you just put that shit on everything. Like you've F-22 right. here, F-22 here. Like, yeah, it's such a great light. But we also had the Falcon Eyes, which is like basically the same thing, just bicolor mm. and from a different mm. company. So what we didn't use was that. And I don't know if that would have made like a, I'm glad that we didn't use it. And that's something that we wrote out in the prep of like making sure we had a lot of wrap and like instead mm. of having it, you know, really shadowy. But then I think maybe it was like a style that came out where I'm thinking, wait, no, I want it to look more shadowy. So let's just do the F-22 and not the Falcon Eyes. Mm. So it was actually about creating more like shadow than
more contrast.
Yeah. More contrast. And yeah, mm. that's, I think where the plan didn't like actually translate to what we wanted, but sure. it's, I'm still so new to that. Like learning about lighting is one thing on YouTube, but actually doing it and
for sure
executing it's like, yeah. you learn obviously so much more on a set. And like, I guess for those watching, if you want to learn about lighting, get a light in your hand and see what it does in a room. Like just point right. it at something, then point it through something, then bounce it and see what happens. Because when you actually see it, then you can make those mental notes of, oh, okay, if I bounce it, then it becomes softer, but there's less contrast. Like there's just so many things you can make mental notes on when you actually do it. Because with the Wondering DP, like, he's awesome. I can yeah, understand he's like, what he's saying. Oh,
yeah, this light here, doing this, that thing. It's
yeah, like, it's wow, so like, he's just simple. Yeah.
Yeah.
He just dissects it so well. But then each space that you walk into is going to be so different. So, like, mm-hmm. you're going to have to be versed, like, you're going to have to be versed in what specific lights do and which scenarios you're going to use those in. Because like sure. perfect example, this Bumble thing, the living room, no, it was the kitchen was technically there was only two locations. It was the kitchen and then the living room. And the kitchen had a ton of windows, but it was an evening spot. So we were like, either we black out all of these windows and it's going to take way too much time, or we just start with the living room because there's only two windows there and black those out first. Just like, you know, certain things like that, where initially I would have liked to shoot the kitchen first, but like, it just, you know, certain things like that where you're like, yeah. this room is not going to look the exact same as any other thing that the Wondering DP has broken down, you know, like every space right. is going to be so different with external factors and all this stuff. So yeah, it's a,
right.
you gotta be flexible. Like,
I think that's an interesting point you bring up, because I think for me, I struggled really, lighting was the one thing I could never grasp in the beginning. It was the hardest thing for me to understand until I realized that I was like, my thinking process in lighting was trying to be too complex when I really didn't have a great foundation on the fundamentals of lighting first. Mm. So understanding the fundamentals and really dialing those in to be able to, a lot of the DP work that I've done over the past 3 years, like stuff that I'll never show, is like a lot of interviews. And interviews for me, people could think are this like mundane, you know, DP work that, you know, no creative freedom, it's just boring, I don't want to do them anymore. But I love interviews because it literally tests your fundamentals to the maximum. Because you could shoot a basic interview, or you could walk into a room that 9 times out of 10 you've never seen before, and you have to make it look good, make it look the best you can. And by practicing those fundamentals, by lighting a face, because that's what an interview is, you're lighting a face, but you're also lighting the space behind the person as well.
Yep.
You start to understand what things do, what type, the quality of light looks like. And once I understood that, as long as I can dial in the fundamentals first, and you know, when I'm in a new space that I'm struggling to figure out how to light, figure out where is the camera going to be, what am I facing, and then just look at that frame first. Like sometimes I get overwhelmed of looking at the entire world that I'm current, like in real life, but in reality I only need to light what's in between that frame.
Yeah.
So sometimes simplifying your approach and then building upon that has helped me find more confidence in my ability to light. So
that's a great point. And with it's the most recent thing that I've done. I keep bringing up the Bumble thing, but there were many scenes.
I'm glad you do, because it's great. And I'm going to share it when this comes out, because I think it's something you should be very proud of, for sure.
Thank you. Yeah, it's like with that, there were so many different shots in the same room. So I was like, in order to save time, I was actually the reverse of that, where I was like, I have to light this whole space. And that's probably where I was like, oh no, like freaking out. Cause I'm like, if I have to face, if the camera is seeing all like a full 180 here, then all my lights have to just be either on this side of the room or boomed overhead somehow so that we can't see it. Or, you know, that was difficult for sure. But I guess those are just two approaches of either you light for the room, depending on how flexible and floaty the camera has to be. But then that's also our decision of do we want a bunch of wides? Because if we do, that's going to complicate a lot of our lighting.
Yeah, it's brutal.
You know,
yeah, it's brutal.
Like the one, it was the headphone commercial with Danny.
Bose?
Yeah, the Bose one. That one you mentioned, or maybe Danny mentioned it. I can't remember which video it was, but you guys talked about getting more mediums, because then your world is smaller. There's less lights that you have to throw around. By the way, I am ordering a white pool noodle very soon because of you. You have to have an Amazon link to those.
I do. I sold a lot
of
them.
Do you?
I made a lot of money on my Amazon affiliate from those white pool noodles.
That's hilarious.
But I've also got people, there's been people that comment on a YouTube video or message me being mad at me because it's not available in their country. I'm like, how is that my fault? How is that my problem? I'm sorry.
Go talk to your pool noodle friends and make them available in my country.
No, but the pool noodles are great. Like, they're so cheap, but the one thing they do, you lose level in the light, but in terms of softness, it's a freaking amazing tool.
Yeah, I'm so excited to get mine. I'm super sold on it, because
I use it all the time.
That would have, I think, helped the Bumble thing, because if we wanted to be even more flexible than the F22, we could have just Hollywood that anywhere and you're good.
That's insane. The problem with the tubes is they're soft, but you go through a layer of plastic, and that layer of plastic for me isn't as soft as it doesn't feel as organic as the pool noodle. And the pool noodle spreads that light, because the tube light is only this thick.
Yep.
But when you have a noodle, it spreads throughout the whole entire thing, and it becomes a bigger source, and that's what makes it softer.
Yep. So it's I'm so excited.
Phenomenal tool. I saw that for the first time on an A24 set. Her name was Ava Berkovsky. She is an ASC DP, freaking killer. And I saw these pool noodles just laying around. I'm like, oh, this is brilliant. Like, it's not something I invented. It's something that big time people use for years.
Yeah.
And it's like one of those gatekeeping things that nobody ever shared.
Yep.
And I think I just shared it with people, and it kind of, went a little wild. But
you're the pool noodle guy.
I am the pool. I should have started like my own pool noodle business before I promoted it and just sold 100%. My own pool noodle brand and then tripled the price because it's a film pool noodle.
Yeah. I think that would have been genius.
But I'm curious, I've seen you in a couple posts also like camera operating and ACing. How much other crew work are you doing besides DP stuff?
Yeah, so it's, I'm glad you asked because that was, I guess this summer is when I was second ACing a little bit just to like figure out what it's like to be a smaller piece to a bigger puzzle. Right. And I mean, it's been a very recent journey for me understanding the hierarchy of film because I come from the sport media videography side and then accidentally started producing and I was like, oh, okay, I was producing that, but I shot it. So does that make me a cinematographer? And then the whole transition between what the heck is a cinematographer versus videographer and like, why are people so offended? And it's just all this stuff, right, that comes with that transition. So in order for me to feel like I could say that like with my chest and confidently, I was like, I just want to be a very small puzzle piece on bigger sets and understand how other people are lighting things, understand like what I need to ask from my team when I'm shooting. And like what I need to look for, you know, like sense of urgency, organization, having the gear yourself, you know, like owning certain things actually does help sometimes. I think I was second ACing for a little bit and then I first AC'd. It's just, you know, on very indie, independent films that are like very low pressure, lots of time to learn, which was really nice. Max Mezzo was the DP for something this summer. It was like a bunch of short, funny commercials, and he was working with the director that wanted to do more comedy stuff. And so that was like a really cool learning opportunity for me. And Max is like 21, and he just, you know, he just graduated from film school like a couple of years ago. And I'm like, I don't care that I'm, you know, 6 years older or whatever. Let me just like be in this environment and see what they do. And it, like, I totally learned a lot. So translating that information back into like DPing and understanding, especially the lighting too, like just being there and seeing things happen in the flow, that like significantly helps my process too. So yeah, it's using that to then further my, you know, cinematography side of things, just like everything else, I think, you know, like trying to be on different sets is one thing. And then with the whole filmmaking education side, like the YouTube or the TikTok, using that as well to get brands on board to then maybe I have new lights and I'm like, oh, great, I can use that to benefit my cinematography. Right. Like I'm trying to loop it all so that I can just grow this creative side. But yeah, just the more that you know within camera, and that's all I've really done. I haven't done any gaffing or any other departments. It's solely just been camera. But the more you know, even if it's just a little bit of how things work, what people need when you're in that position, it's so much easier to be a leader because you're like,
100%.
I know exactly what you need, especially being a producer. Like, you probably know all about that, where you're like, as a DP, I know that if this project is 10 grand, this is probably going to be my camera package. It's not going to be the Alexa Mini with Cooks. Like, no, you're going to shoot on an FX3 and it's going to be a favor. Like, your ideas of budgeting, your ideas of like timeline, that all helps being a DP or being a producer, and then taking that information back to being a DP. It's like, it's so underrated.
I've always said that I haven't done, you know, coming up an insane amount of crewing. I kind of went a more different route where I just decided that I was a DP and just became one and just did my best to do that. But I did crew to a degree. I think enough for me to understand that I am not made for any of those positions. at all. Because ACing for me, I did it a couple times, and I can't do it. I'm not good at all.
Yeah. What was your challenge? You
I just wanted to be shooting. I just wanted, like, I knew immediately what I want my role in this industry was. Once I realized what a DP was, that's all I cared about. And, you know, obviously you're not doing that immediately. So, you know, when you're ACing, I don't think it was technically that difficult for me. Granted, I wasn't doing the most extreme stuff. It was a pretty simplistic project.
Yeah.
But all I cared about was like, I wish I could be deciding what lights we're using and why we're shooting it. Like, that's what I really loved. And I think I then made a unique transition to stop crewing as much and DP and PA simultaneously, which is a very rare thing. And I don't think a lot of people do it, but, while I was DPing smaller projects and growing within my market, I was also simultaneously PAing on projects. And for me, that didn't put me necessarily in a box in terms of like what department I'm so focused on, but it gave me a better overall view of the entire project and the entire scope of the project.
Totally.
I don't know if that's a good thing, bad thing. It helped me for a while until I, you know, stopped PAing. But I think being able to see different positions and see the film set in a different point of view does help you as a leader, which is something that is super important in being a DP, is your leadership skills.
Did you ever think about union stuff? Like, what kind of unions do you guys have where you are?
We have like Local 600, which is the camera union. We have, what is the G&E union? I forget what it is. But I've considered going union. I don't think I'm there yet in terms of my skill and my career as a DP. I think eventually, given my inspirations of what I want to be shooting, I think I'll inevitably have to go union at some point as a DP. I just don't think, right now I'm getting enough work as a non-union DP. I'm making a good living and I'm doing some great projects. I still don't have an agent yet either, which is like, I think the next step for me is trying to find an agent.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the unions are like in Canada. Are they, are they hard to get into?
Yes. It's very competitive from what I have heard. It takes a long time to get to the DP, you know, role. Like, people that are DPs in the union are like above 60, you know, like you're in it for a while. And, if I was even interested in getting into the union, I would start as a camera trainee, and then you would move up to a second as if you have a certain amount of hours. And then, like, being a camera trainee teaches you how to be a second, but it definitely doesn't teach you how to be a first. So if you were a second in the union, from what I've heard, like, this isn't like firsthand experience, but you would need to first AC on indie stuff or on things, you know, to learn the skill and then apply to upgrade once, again, you have a certain amount of hours. Same for operating, like, you just need to work a ton of indie things to like account for hours and, in order to move up. But it's, such a mixed review, like, so many people.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Because we're independent and we kind of came from the work with your friends and good vibes on set kind of, like, you know, mindset.
It's a whole different world, union sets. I've seen a couple of them. It's a whole different world. Yeah. I was saying the A24 thing where I saw the pool noodle. I don't know how I got connected with A24, but I shot a couple behind the scenes documentaries for two films that A24 created. And I got to, like, that was the best like college experience I could have gotten. Like, that trumps film school to me. I would come on set, not beholden to any department. I had my own camera and I'm just observing everything that's going on and filming it. It was amazing. But
that's amazing.
It's just crazy to see how union sets work and like how each person has their specific role and nobody does anything else. And like, I see the benefit. I also am so not used to that very much.
Yep. I wish that I could experience that same thing just to like know for myself if I would want to be on those sets or not. And I don't know about you. Like, are you big into movies? Like, you're a big movie watcher?
I wouldn't say that I'm like a movie buff. I also came into this industry so late. Like, I was an athlete my whole life, never was an artist creative until I was about 19 or 20, and I'm 25 right now. So like, I came super late. So I have conversations with people and they're talking about movies that inspired them from the 1930s. And I'm like, I can't even relate. Like, I'm not that deep. And I don't know if that's like a fault. I don't know if I should be. Yeah. But like, granted, I do love movies, and, you know, shooting the feature that I did I did catch like a bug of wanting to shoot more features.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely not like a film nerd by any stretch, not even close.
Yeah. Me, I completely relate. Like, people are like, have you watched Kill Bill? I'm like, sorry, no. <Yeah. laughs> I know what it is. I know that there's like swords and stuff. That's about it. Like, so I definitely have like a watch list of movies I should probably know, you know, like as someone in the industry.
Yeah.
But I never came into it the same way, like, you know, athlete sport world. I'm thinking, my brain is more at this point in my career, I'm more thinking commercial, and eventually maybe I will similarly catch that bug. I actually did shoot a short narrative this past summer. I have no idea when it's going to come out. I've seen it already. Like, it's done color and stuff. And it was such a good experience because, it showed me like, it really revealed how much I still have to learn, because when you shoot narrative, you have to light it in a realistic way. Whereas commercial, you can do all kinds of funky, cool tricks to like make it high key, make it look flashy and fake and beautiful and all this stuff. But like, yeah, when you're shooting a living room scene at night, make it look real and make it not look like you lit it. And so it's a totally different approach, I found, at least with narrative. So that's the only real reason why I ask, is like that transition from, if you want to go into that union world, like the movie side of things is usually where people gravitate to, because you're doing more shows or narrative and things like that, versus the independent side of things, where that I tend to find, at least in Toronto, that's where the more commercially music video kind of stuff lives. So yeah, it's totally different worlds though.
Yeah. But it's two different muscles you have to work as a DP. And I've talked about this before. Like, when I was shooting the feature, there was one scene in particular that like really got to me, and it was like at a dinner table, and dinner table scenes are like, you know, top lit because there's usually like a chandelier or something.
Yep.
And I remember looking at the image and I'm like, this, it fits for what I'm doing, but like, I'm leaving raccoon eyes. I'm leaving the fact that there really isn't an eye light that I would normally do. I would normally clean this up if it was a commercial, but because of the story and the character, I left it. But it was such a moment of realization for me of like a different muscle. And like, I had to train myself to be like, it's not supposed to be polished like a commercial.
Yep. Totally.
Yeah, it's tough. But the other thing,
it's like a
about
different
narrative,
checklist, I guess, you know,
100%.
Yeah.
And you also have to make the look consistent for an hour and a half, opposed to 30 seconds. That's also a huge challenge.
Huge. Yep. That was a big thing that we faced too, when you're switching between different dialogue, and you know, you're also definitely not shooting anything in order. So you got to make a mental note of, okay, this was our lighting setup from when we shot this one scene, so we got to move these lights back to where they were. And then if you don't do that, it's super challenging. And I'm super grateful that I did it. And it like really opened my eyes to, totally different checklist, like brand new. And granted, I was the last one to get hired almost, like they had, which is super rare, like as a DP. So it was
for real.
Yeah. Like director, AD, producer, even the gaffer, like art, it was like all in place. And then it was like me. And I was like, okay, cool. And it was also a team of pretty much all guys. And I was just coming in like, why me? But okay, right. Sure. Like, I'm down to still do it and try. And I'm super glad that I did. But yeah, super, it's a very different process than what I'm used to.
I noticed on the Bumble behind the scenes that the crew was like predominantly female. Is that something that you find that you want to introduce more? Are you finding that, you know, women are becoming more interested in your area in filmmaking?
Yeah. I'll throw it back to like the sport days where, cause I think this is like a crucial part to why I am, you know, happy to be in this industry where like in camera, there's not a lot of girls. Do you know Cassie Athena?
Cassie Athena.
She's a photographer and she's an NBA photographer. And I used to shoot basketball. Like that's where my, like the very first kind of things that I was shooting were like basketball highlight tapes and stuff. And I remember seeing her and I was like, oh shoot, she's like this blonde girl shooting NBA players that are like 7 feet. And right. I don't know if she's like super tall, but I just, obviously she's not a guy. So I was like, that's really cool. Like if she can do it, I can do it too kind of thing. And I think it's when it came to the filmmaking side of things, similar kind of world, especially as strength and conditioning, because I'm coming in as this like 5'4" little girl being like,
listen, I'm not a girl, but I'm 5'4" as well. So I do. I relate on the height side of things.
On the height side, totally. Yeah, when you're at least with the strength and conditioning stuff, it was like, you know, football teams coming in at like 6 a.m. and I'm telling them, yeah, okay, dumbbell press here, and then it's 3 reps, like whatever. I'm just leading them through a workout, but it's like, what the heck does she know? So it's like a, that confidence was built like way back then of like, it really doesn't matter the fact that I am a girl in this industry. Like it's, if anything, it's helped me because I'm sometimes more recognizable. It's like, oh yeah, the girl that was there, like, because it's such a random, you know, like thing to think about. But, yeah, I think going back to the Bumble crew stuff, that was completely not conscious. Like it was also like a Galentine's Day commercial. So like it was surrounded around, you know, girlfriends hanging out for dinner and stuff. So the concept, I think, generally
like led into that.
Yeah, it led into that, but it wasn't like top of mind that like, oh, we need a predominantly female crew. I think it's like important for it to be it shouldn't be like the very top of mind. Like your skill set should be top of mind when hiring for sure. But yeah, there's like a interesting like balance. I wouldn't even say balance. It just has to be something that people maybe should think about a little bit, just a little bit. Like I'm not asking for the whole thing, but just like think of it just a little bit, because when I saw Cassie Athena shooting, I was like, oh shit, like she can do it, I can do it too. And so when you have the visibility and the optics where like the first person that I saw that had like an easy rig was this girl, Christina Iana. She's in the CSC here. Okay. And she's like, I was like, oh, like I didn't even know that I could wear one. Like I was like genuinely with the, is it ergonomic for me? Is it super heavy? Like, can I physically do this job? That was a genuine question that I had, because I was like, these cameras are very heavy. They're like, you're operating on your feet all the time. So it was obviously, it was nice because I come from the can background, like working out in the gym, and health and fitness is still super important. So that definitely helped. Like if I wasn't, you know, lifting weights and stuff, it would be hard. But yeah, being able to see another woman do it, I was like, oh, like, okay, she probably has some answers to questions that I've always had. And yeah, I think there was also a time, I've talked about this in a couple podcasts, but I think this was like maybe 2 or 3 years ago now, where a university where we were shooting for TEDx. It was like TED Talks, okay, basically. And mm-hmm. I was producing it, and it was like 2 or 3 hours in to this shoot, and I realized that I was the only girl on the set, but I did the hiring. So I was like, oh, like what? Like it's never, it wasn't conscious to me up until that point where I was like, oh, like I have the power to make those decisions, but
sure.
I've been surrounded by guys this whole time. Like my entire filmmaking career, I've been supported and uplifted by men in this industry. And it's been, to be like, in my experience, there's been so much good that has come from that. So it's because I'm, you know, like kind of a minority in that sense, it was kind of eye-opening of like, oh, I could kind of change this because I'm a producer. And even as a DP, you have sometimes control over who your crew 100%. Is going to be. So yeah, it's just like something that I now keep in the back of my mind of like, it would be nice to have an even balance, but skill set still trumps everything. Like I will die on that hill of like, if there's an opportunity for a girl to come on board and learn, sweet. Mm-hmm. Just so that the next time maybe she can improve her stuff over time and, you know, get into the position that she wants to get into. But yeah, it's like, yeah, skill set trumps all, but it's like kind of lonely, but it's changing. Mm-hmm. Like I can totally see it changing and growing, and like that's, I'm pretty sure that's why Lizzie found me on TikTok, was because I was like, I said hashtag female filmmaker or whatever, and it popped up on her page and she was like, oh, yeah. So let's join forces. But yeah.
You kind of remind me, or maybe she reminds me of you in a sense. There's this girl that I've been working with for 2 years. I met her on, I Think I'm Sick, the feature.
Nice.
And before
which I
coming
still haven't
the,
seen, and I want to
I
see
know,
it so bad.
I know. It's playing in London next month and New Jersey next month. And then nice. After that, hopefully it'll be coming out in the next like 2 months, 3 months. We'll see.
Sweet.
I don't know.
Yay.
Can't say. But she, before coming onto the project, she was on the project because it was her school internship. She was just mm-hmm. like a camera trainee, just, you know, just there to be a part of the project. And when I came on, I moved her up to second AC. And by just like that simple upgrade a little bit, it changed everything. She was, even to this day, she is one of the best crew members that I have ever worked with in any department. She is like, and I tell her this all the time, how good she actually is. She arrives on set before me, which is crazy because I arrive early. Yep. And she is so prepared. She knows, she anticipates things well. And just like that simple action of like empowerment and like lifted her up to really just like blossom. And I've been able to bring her on commercials and other things. And she wants to be shooting. So I mean, I'd love to connect you guys at some point because she's amazing. She
That's
really
awesome.
Is.
Awesome. Yeah. And it's just like you said, the little like upgrade, it means a lot. Like it's right. huge when someone sees like, oh, you can, you know, you don't have to just PA or you're not like full entry level. Like let's give you a little more responsibility. And I think, right. I don't know if this applies to like all creatives necessarily, but I feel like there's an underlying sense of ADHD, you know, of just, especially in the entrepreneurship realm where you're like, I sure. want to take on so many things and yeah. do all of the things, and creativity flows sometimes with those kind of like neurospicy topics, if you know what I mean. Right. Like, so when you give someone, definitely not even saying like she has ADHD, I'm not saying that at all, but in the creative community, if you are maybe just in the observing role, you might not even be as interested to like participate. Whereas if you have many tasks to do, for especially for me, I'm like, I'm even more excited because I'm like, you know, the game Cooking Mama, where you're like, you have six pots boiling.
Was that like years? Is that like popular years ago?
Yeah.
Or is it still popular
years and
today?
Years and years ago. There's another game called Overcooked, and it's similar.
I remember where it's Cooking like, Mama. I think I remember that. Wow, you like tapped into a. What's that other game? Yogi Mama? I don't know. Someone said another game like a while ago, and it just like hit like a chord in my brain that I didn't even think was there anymore.
Just unlocked some memories, but it's that game was like you have many tasks and you have to do them in order, and you just you're constantly doing something, and you know that there's three or four things in the queue that you have to do next. And I find those are the environments where like I would thrive the most, especially as a second coming from like the DP and going to a second. You don't have as many things to think about, but you still make it your own. Like you know, understand what kind of tasks you have to do and what you have to keep checking, and that sense of anticipation, like that's
anticipation
a huge thing.
Is huge as a second AC, knowing when a battery needs to be changed or just anticipating when the first might need something. I think it's also just like the sense of purpose is huge in those roles, and being able to, you know, like what you said, find what those things could be.
Totally.
It's amazing. So you're I have just a couple more questions, but since you're also doing the content creation side, which is kind of starting to get into the realm of having conversations with brands, you talked about entrepreneurship, and I'm curious as to how you find that balance between being a creative and thinking about business.
I love business. I love making money.
Me too. Glad we're on the same page.
Yeah. Like if you love it, obviously you're going to dedicate more time to it. So I have certain things set up that are, you know, I know tons of people don't as creatives, like automatic email replies and like quick messages. If someone messages me on Instagram, hey, I want to hire you, I have a quick message that says, like, I just have to type lead or something or like whatever. And it sends them a message to say, hey, fill out this form. Like, thanks so much for reaching out. Please fill out this form. Like something that I would, you know, take at least 5 or 10 seconds to say. When I think business, I just think automation because it's so much work. So the whole, the automatic emails, anything that I can just automate on the side, that is all set up. And QuickBooks, that's another thing, like keeping track of expenses and all that. Like that's something that I'm very like proud to have spent time on developing as like a foundation. Mm-hmm. And then when things get really busy and chaotic, like I have, those are just running in the background.
Yeah, there's systems in place for sure.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, like, do you have a bookkeeper? Like, are you your own bookkeeper?
I'm my own bookkeeper to a degree. I have an accountant that I work with pretty regularly to help me. But
Me too.
I have some videos that I put out about personal finance, and it's so important understanding, because a freelancer's life is so potentially inconsistent, especially in the beginning, having systems in place or different bank accounts to be able to put you in a position of like having a safety net is so important.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I feel like a lot of people are kind of afraid to talk about in the freelance world is like money. And it's something that I'm never really afraid to talk about because I know how important it is.
The money side of things is, it's just kind of fun. I don't know. Like even as much as I don't really like math, I like numbers and
I like counting money.
In that sense, I like if the numbers mean money, then great. Like I'm here for it. Right. So yeah, it's like understanding, I guess my goal last year in terms of like finances and business goals was to, essentially increase my production value, so like hiring more crew members and making bigger teams. And in the numbers you can see it, you can actually see the always get them mixed up, but like your gross income, it was mm-hmm. substantially higher, but my net was the same as like the previous year. So like I knew that so much of that was going to subcontractors and expenses and all that stuff. So now into this year, I'm like, okay, let's get the net higher as well as the gross, you know, like that would be nice. But just understanding those basic concepts, like that will help you so much. If you are, I guess, like more times than not responsible for people other than yourself, because if you are one piece of the puzzle and you're in a union or you're, you know, just in that one role and you're not really hiring other people, it's still important, but it's not like as important as if you're, you know, you have a website to maintain, you have clients that expect certain like optics. So like you have to be ready to be able to hire, you know, certain people and appear maybe bigger than you actually are sometimes. That's like a whole fake it till you make it game that I've played since the beginning.
I've played that many times too.
Yeah.
I remember the first time it was like a $500,000 commercial I was doing. It was like, I've never done anything like this before. This was like a year, 2 years ago maybe. And I had 11 or 12 crew members in G&E. And this is my first time using 18Ks on condors outside. Yep. And like, on the scout, I'm like, yeah, this is what we need to do. This is like, this is that. And the other thing in my head, I'm like, I hope this works. I have no idea. But I had a great team that like behind me that like, you know, understood where I actually was. To producers and agency people, and you know, you're getting hired as a DP, you do need to put up some sort of like front in terms of confidence to be able to prove that you are the one that's capable to get the job done.
Yep, 100%.
There is a degree of that for sure.
Yeah.
I got one last question for you. And first off, thanks for the conversation. This has been great so far.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It's been fun. I actually, before you ask this next question, can I say one story? It just reminded me, there was like speaking of appearing bigger than what, you know, like optics wise and things like that. It was actually the project that I shared on your Discord. This was like I won't name specific names. If you were on the Discord and you saw it, you know which one I'm talking about. But this project, similar to you, where you were like, biggest budget I've worked with, like so many crew members, just like, and it was also, in my case, it was for someone I looked up to on like a personal level where you're like, oh, wow, this could be career changing. This is like the narrative that you have in your head. And I have no idea why they reached out to me. They found me through Instagram and I totally faked it. I was like, sounds good. Like, I can do this. No problem at all. And to this day, that has been like the best, but equally the worst production ever. And I don't think I shot for 4 or 5 months after that, just because of the true chaos of that. Oh my God, it was just, probably have to go to therapy for it. It was crazy because like, I'll just put it into perspective of like, I think it was this was my first time dealing with, I think it was like 70 grand of a budget. And they looked at me
as
the
production
company.
Which is a lot. If you've never done that before, that's a lot.
It was a lot to manage as the first, one of the first, you know, big things as, you know, so they looked at me as the production company and I was also going to DP it, which was first mistake. Don't like, I wouldn't on a spec. Great. But to be able to do both, if you have done both and you've done it numerous times and you have a flow, great. But this is the first time where I was like, yeah, I could DP this too. Why did I think that? I don't know. But there's certain things where you're like, is this imposter syndrome or am I actually kidding myself? Like, you know, there's a weird That's balance a there. And so to put it into perspective with that 70 grand budget, we had, I think it was like 4 or 5 days of production and we had maybe 12 or no, I think maybe even 15 crew members. 3 days before production, they say,
oh, no.
hey, so this studio space we're shooting in, we can only have 5 people. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean? Yeah, we can only have 5 people. This was around the COVID time because the person we were shooting was like immunocompromised or whatever. And it was also obviously like everyone signed an NDA, so fine. But like it's a private, more private space. So they were like, yeah, and that also includes client. So I'm like, okay. How many client people do you need in this space?
They're like,
oh, probably two. I'm like, so yikes. We've got to shoot this with, what did I say? 4 or 5 people? I don't know.
Five people.
2 client, and it was me, the director, and sound. When I tell you, I've probably gained like 6 years on my life from that shoot. We had our gaffer upstairs outside of the building building the lights, and me and the director would run up the stairs, grab the lights, run them down, and position them. We had 2 cameras.
Did you tell this story in like a in that webinar that I had like a year, two
maybe.
Years ago?
Maybe.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, but
wow, that's
I just
crazy.
Like to wrap it up, speaking about faking it till you make it, be careful when you do that, because yes, you can't like there's a whole thing of imposter syndrome, and like I totally get it. Appear bigger than you are, like under promise over deliver is another, you know, saying to go by. But like if you need help, do not be afraid to ask for it, because if you really don't know like what you're doing, and an opportunity can come sooner than your skill level can meet it, it can mess you up.
Yeah.
And you know, I learned so
advice.
Much, but I would love to redo that. And final product looks great. Nobody would know, but like the behind
you
the
know.
Scenes, you know. Yep. And a lot of the crew remember that too, you know, because it trickles down when if your director's stressed, if your DP's stressed, your whole crew feels it too. So we had to fire a ton of people. Like it was crazy. But anyway, just as a like
great
little
story.
Nugget.
Yeah, that
of
was a great
info.
Story. Yeah. A great story, and there was also some great pieces of advice in there.
Yeah.
My last question is what am I thinking? I guess when you're doing sports media, we'll start there. When you're doing sports media, that version of you that, you know, you at that age, you at that experience is sitting at a table, and across from that version of you is you now. What would you give that younger version of you from where you are sitting now?
Like advice on what to say.
Sure.
To them.
You know, just in general, like what would you give that version of you that's just starting their career?
I know that everyone hesitates when you ask this question. I watched a couple of podcasts and everyone was like, And I think people hesitate because like, you don't want to give away too much to this younger person. You want them to go through the learning lessons and stuff. You know, you want them to fail and then recover, and you know, so you don't want to like give too much. But I would just say, I don't know, like you're never going to know everything, but the people around you are going to make it so worth it. Like that is, I think, the one thing I would say, like if I had no idea where I would be or like what skill set I'm going to have, like even if I decided to become a gaffer, like, I don't know if my career path changes like within film, it's like truly the people around you that are gonna make this so much fun. And like spec projects speak for that. Even paid projects where you have phenomenal crew working with you, meeting people like you and like Lizzie, like through social media or whatever, like just being open to new connections and new relationships with people. Like, it's the coolest thing. Like, it, we all have this passion for what we do, and we wouldn't be doing it if we didn't like it. Like, this is, you know, grind. Like, it's hours and hours, late nights, like lifting heavy shit. Like, you're like, this is not like, you know, something that you do for the money necessarily, but it goes back to those like crew vibes. Like, when you're on a set and you get into a flow state and people are laughing and making jokes and everything is just going smoothly, and you just feel that fulfillment from everyone. Like, that's what matters. And like,
that's what
hopefully
it's about.
Yeah. In I guess when I look to the future too, commercials sometimes not necessarily have that same like outcome of the final piece, because you're selling a product, but I hope that some of the commercials that I work on are maybe like short films or docs or whatever, they have a meaning as well. Like, there's intentionality behind the crew that made it, you know, feels good and is fulfilled and finds purpose doing it, but the product will also, you know, show that what, like, whatever we're actually creating will also serve a cool purpose and fulfillment to like other people watching it, not just like a cool DoorDash commercial or like a, you know, that doesn't tell a story. It's just selling something. I think that's where you would like really get that's like hitting the rainbow thing on Mario Kart. Like, you're just like, the coolest feeling when you get both. So yeah,
amazing.
That's what I would say.
Great. That's a great note. I know it's definitely a tough question for people. And a lot of the times, like a lot of people have a similar response as to like, I don't want to give too much advice because some of the hardships that I've went through are kind of what make me who I am. But there's usually an answer people could find within it.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks for coming on. Where can people find you? Share all of your stuff.
Yeah.
Share your stuff.
Yeah, I guess I do the YouTube thing now. So YouTube
share it.
YouTube is just my name, Nicole Shapiro. Instagram's nshaps, and TikTok is nshaps.prod. And TikTok, I post pretty much like, I'm trying to still post once a day-ish. Turning down the volume a little bit now just because of the YouTube stuff. But yeah, I'm trying to share lots of tips there. So yeah.
Amazing. I'll link all of that in the description and your Bumble commercial as well.
Cool. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you for coming on. I appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, guys.
Of course. All right, everyone. Have a great day. Peace out. So thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Creative Gap Podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed today's episode. And if you did, there are a ton of other episodes for you to listen to as well. Check us out on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you want to get your podcast, you can find it. And now that you're watching this, you could also watch the full video podcast on YouTube. Also, be sure to check us out on Instagram at Creative Gap for future updates, upcoming guests, and a lot of short clips. For those of you who are new to the show, welcome. Hopefully you enjoy it. And for those of you who have been here for a long time, thank you. So that's all we got for you today. Hopefully you enjoyed the episode. We'll see you next time. Peace out.